Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
All right, welcome to another edition of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Audioboom. Do that, leave us a 5-star review, email us with any questions or advertising inquiries at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and send us questions at Locked On Bulls. I'm Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report and NBC Sports. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score in Chicago. And Cody, the Bulls are world champions of Summer League.
Sean, we launched this podcast, June 20th or something like that. And since then, the Bulls are 7-0. Summer League Bulls, 7-0, undefeated champions. Coincidence or not?
The Bulls are undefeated. The Bulls have literally never lost a game in the Locked On Bulls era. I think we need to get championship rings.
That would be incredible. I want a really big, gaudy one. I want people to be able to see it from, 50 yards away if I'm wearing a Summer League championship ring.
The championship ring for Summer League is probably just a plastic ring that you buy at the casino gift shop or something. Because they actually, you know what's interesting? They actually do have a Summer League championship trophy, and they did after the Bulls won the game last night on the Denzel Valentine buzzer beater against the Minnesota Timberwolves. They did do a whole trophy presentation, and then they gave Jerian Grant the game MVP award, and he got a little trophy that kind of looked like the Rookie of the Year trophy, which is kind of like a glass thing with the NBA logo on it. It wasn't too fancy, but they actually did it up with trophies and everything.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, and for our listeners, Sean is still in Las Vegas for the Summer League Championship in USA Basketball. I'm in Chicago, so he'll have the insight here, but the Bulls, they were all about that trophy and celebrating that. Denzel Valentine, Bobby Portis, Spencer Dinwiddie, I think, were all posting to social media how excited they were, championship pictures, smiles, and Denzel Valentine with the quote of the century as well, Sean, that you were kind enough to relay to the entire world. Do you want to share it with everyone?
It was pretty unbelievable. Denzel, afterwards, he did his press availability after the game, and somebody asked him, you guys won the championship, but it's only Summer League, so do you guys think about that and how it doesn't really matter? And he's like, anybody saying that has never won the Summer League championship. And I just...
That's just classic.
It was so good.
Just classic.
It was so great. It was, he's absolutely right. I have never won the Summer League championship, and I was saying that, and now I feel kind of bad because it's still competition. These guys are not just showing up, mailing it in. I mean, I guess somebody like Denzel Valentine doesn't need to really prove anything because he was a lottery pick and a first round pick, and he has a spot on the roster that's guaranteed for a couple of years. But a lot of the guys playing in Summer League, basically anybody who wasn't a first round pick or isn't already on a team, this is their chance to play when scouts are watching and GMs are watching, and get their way onto a roster and try to get a training camp invite from somebody. So, the guys do take this stuff seriously.
Yeah, and that, just to be clear, that was 100% serious quote, in earnest.
Yeah, no, he was excited about it.
That is terrific. I did find it slightly entertaining. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I thought Jerian Grant played pretty poor basketball for the first 6 games of Summer League. Sunday night after the Bulls win their semifinal, they give the league MVP or tournament MVP Tyus Jones of the Timberwolves. Then Jerian Grant goes out and goes for 24 points, 10 rebounds, 9-19 from the field, torching everyone off the dribble in the championship, and still shooting some really difficult shots. But then he wins the championship MVP. What are we supposed to make of him in this 7-game stretch? What did we learn? I'm a little concerned about Jerian Grant because he was bad for 6 games, shooting in the low 30%, and every shot he seemed to take was difficult the whole time. And I know some of that's because he got the ball late in the shot clock, but he seemed to do too much one-on-one sometimes, and then in the title game where he had favorable matchups, maybe he found it a little bit, then that one-on-one play and just creation off the dribble seemed to work better.
Yeah, it was, and I think it's gonna. I think that's gonna be a little bit less of a problem during the regular season because he's gonna have better players around him, so he's not gonna have to do as much by himself. You know, he's gonna actually have a whole team full of NBA players instead of just. You know, sometimes he's on the floor with their whole unit of guys that are going to be on the team, but sometimes he was on the floor with just these random dudes who are never going to be NBA players. So that's another reason why I can't really read too much into what he was doing. For what it's worth, I would have given the game MVP trophy to first team all summer league selection and MVP snub Bobby Portis.
Absolutely. Bobby was great. He averaged 17.3 points, 9.4 rebounds on 49% shooting. For the seven Vegas Summer League games, then he got a technical foul shot. Was that in the championship? Or I'm getting my nights mixed up. I don't know if it's the semis or the championship, but Bobby Portis got a technical foul in Summer League, and I thought that was just classic. I think it was in the title game.
That just proves he's a championship player and has the heart of a champion and really has the drive and desire to win, and he's just a winner.
Well, we do have a Bobby Portis-related question from one of our Twitter followers, and you can find us on Twitter, at LockedOnBulls. And Michael via Twitter said, or excuse me, BJ via Twitter said, do you think Bobby Portis can keep up his three-point shooting? He shot 42% on three-pointers in summer league. It's worth noting he shot 31% as a rookie on three-pointers, shooting about one per game. Is this sustainable, Sean?
I mean, it's not anything that I would ever try to count on with him in terms of, you know, he's going to be a threat. I mean, if he is a threat, that certainly makes him a lot, you know, more useful to them. But I just I think the full game, the full season sample size of the 30% shooting, and for what it's worth, though, and I know that the college three is a lot shorter than the NBA three, but he shot 46.7% his last year at Arkansas from three, and I know, yeah. Again, I know it's a shorter three-point line, but, you know, I don't think it's unthinkable that he...
It can might be helpful if he can improve from there, because Bobby and Nico are going to be on the court at different times, certainly, so if Nico's not out there, Bobby has more range than, like, a Taj Gibson does.
Yes.
So him being able to shoot, even if he hikes it up just from 31%, like 35% or so is league average, get it more around that range, definitely more of a threat and will help the offense. I feel like there's a lot of other things besides the three-point shot that teams need to worry about now, or I should say the Bulls need to worry about. Like, I want to see him get that second post move inside. Like, he's got that little baby hook with the right hook over his left shoulder. He kind of turns and he has that, but he doesn't have, like, a counter move. And I think on multiple occasions, Bobby Portis has acknowledged he needs to get a counter move. I think recently he was even quoted saying he wants to get, like, two more post moves. So I think that should be the focus, because even if you're not posting him up, and the Bulls aren't going to send Bobby Portis to the block to play one-on-one basketball like this is the late 90s or early 2000s, but even if you kind of hit the ball off a roll on a pick and roll and can kind of be ISO'd on your guy, those moves can help. So I think that's the bigger deal for Bobby Portis. But, I mean, let's be clear. Get better at everything as a basketball player. Always helps. Three-point shooting and Fred Hoiberg's offense definitely helps. So I wouldn't have big expectations for that, but I do think he could definitely improve some. I did want to make a note, too, of the Denzel Valentine shot, the one at the end of regulation to tie it, the three-pointer to send it to overtime. That was, like, a ridiculous shot and a nice play call right after the Bulls, like, had their heart broken by Tyus Jones from, like, 34 feet. Like, what was the scene like when he hit that? Was it as difficult as it looked, Sean?
So, a couple of notes about that shot and that play call. KC Johnson, our friend from the Chicago Tribune, tweeted something after Denzel's shot to send the game to overtime, just saying that it was a hell of a play call from Pete Myers, who was the Bulls' assistant coach, who was coaching the summer league team. And then in his post-game availability, Pete Myers said that it was actually Charlie Henry, another one of the Bulls' assistant coaches, that drew up the play to get him that shot. So you got to give credit where credit is due. Now, as far as the Tyus Jones shot, I'm not sure if you saw the vine, but this was a vine that was going around, but Tom Thibodeau was sitting about 10 feet in front of us. And when Tyus Jones was dribbling the ball, he was yelling, pass, pass. And then when Tyus hits the shot... That's, you know, this st- Steph Curry, like, step back 35-footer with two guys on him. It was a totally, like, it was the kind of shot he had no business taking or making. But, you know, Tom just had this look on his face like, he was not happy that it went in because, like, like that's going to, you know, convince Tyus that he's going to be able to take those shots.
Yeah,
that
was, that last Timberwolves possession was, that did not speak volumes to the process because the process was horrible. Only the outcome was good. And I think actually some kind of pioneering Ripley readers and people who are smarter than me, I think they were saying, Kibbs was saying, trust the pass. Trust the pass during that clip of him. So, like, he definitely wanted Jones to make the better basketball play, no doubt. And just and throwing the word trust just kind of is kind of obviously the base in the system, and that's what Tibbs wants to instill in these guys. But, hey, sign me up for every single Bulls-Timberwolves game being like this for the next 5 years. I'm in.
Oh, 100%. Any kind of rivalry the Bulls can have, because, I mean, they have had a rivalry with a quote-unquote rivalry with Cleveland over the years just because of the success that LeBron has had in the playoffs against them. And, you know, there's a little bit of animosity there, you know, especially when Joakim Noah was there because those guys have a history. And now I think that's still there a little bit just now that Dwayne Wade is in Chicago and, you know, he and LeBron are obviously friends and they were teammates in Miami. So that's a little bit of that is still there. But the Bulls don't really have a chief rival at this point, and I feel like there's plenty of chances for the, at least organizationally, for the Bulls and the Timberwolves to be that, because, you know, everybody knows about the relationship between Tibbs and Gar and Pax. I don't think the players really care about that rivalry very much, but, you know, I think on both sides, like Tibbs is going to coach his guys, and not that Tibbs can coach his guys extra hard because he coaches his guys hard all the time, but he's going to really be motivated to win those games against the Bulls, and the Bulls, likewise, Bulls management would really like to win every game against the Timberwolves.
Yeah, and they playing twice a year. It's going to be hard to work up too much of a rivalry, especially with this year's a little weird because the Timberwolves are young, up and coming, and the Bulls are old and kind of stagnant.
Yeah.
So they'll probably actually be competitive games, but in the next few years, I could see the Minnesota just kind of destroying everyone, and playing twice a year is not much for a rivalry, but I'm all for as much animosity as we can get and as much kind of sports hate. We're big fans of sports hate on this podcast, at least I am, and I feel like picking up off everything you've been about in life, Sean, when it comes to sports, sports hate's good, you know? Like, we like the drama, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm totally here for all of this. And, you know, it's been going to be great. And also, you know, we've got Rondo here now. Rondo and Tibbs have a history because Tibbs was an assistant coach in Boston when they won the championship in 2008. So, you know, there's a lot of levels to this, and I think it's going to go well.
Yeah. So as the Bulls were celebrating their summer league title in Vegas, and I think a lot of them hopped on a plane to get back to Chicago quickly. Anyway, Bulls all-star wing, their best basketball player, Jimmy Butler, was in Las Vegas as well for Team USA training camp. And on Monday evening, before the Bulls Summer League game, at the conclusion of Team USA, Jimmy spoke on the record extensively for the first time since the Bulls signed Rondo and Dwayne Wade. And Sean set the scene for us a little bit yesterday. You were there. A lot of Team USA stars. And Jimmy was there as well. Practice ended, and you kind of, you were on Jimmy time again, by the sounds of it.
Oh, yeah, we're always on Jimmy time. He was one of the last guys to talk. First of all, he and some of the other guys, I think Harrison Barnes was in this group, DeMar DeRozan, like some of those guys were still shooting after practice ended when other guys were talking. And obviously all the reporters, you know, crowd around Kevin Durant, they crowd around Draymond Green, they crowd around, you know, all the Warriors guys, and, you know, and some of the other guys like that, and then all around Coach K. It was really just a small group of us who were waiting for Jimmy. It was me, it was KC, and it was Sam Smith of Bulls.com. We were the only, you know, Chicago media members there. But yeah, so Jimmy took a while, and then he, you know, he not only did he have to finish shooting around, he finished his shooting drill, and then he had to get stretched out by one of the trainers before he talked. And then when he did talk, you know, it was actually pretty good. He talked to us for about 8 minutes. At the start, he seemed a little bit disinterested, but once he got going, he was really insightful, and he talked a lot about how he wants to be held accountable by his teammates. He talked about, you know, how it's going to be a difficult adjustment to not have Rose, Noah, and Gasol there. He talked about How he did say, well, the one thing I thought was really telling was he said he's not going to take a back seat to anybody, which kind of gives you a little bit of an insight into how this thing with Rondo and Wade is going to go. And, you know, Jimmy shouldn't take a back seat to anybody. He's the best player out of those three at this point. He's the youngest. He's the one that's been there the whole time. But, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see how the other two of the hashtag three alphas accept that.
Yeah, and I want to read one of the kind of important quotes from Jimmy. He was asked about how he, Wade, Rondo are going to work together because, I mean, they got three big personalities there, three guys that are ball dominant. Jimmy said, quote, "We all just want to win. They have done it. I want to do it, so I'll play my role in that. But like I tell everybody, I'm still going to be the player that I am. I'm not going to take a step backward because I have new players on my team. I'm still going to be aggressive. I'm still going to guard. I'm still going to play hard. I just hope that's enough to make us win," end quote. So that was the backseat quote you kind of talked about.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy was also later asked about the voices in the locker room, and he said, quote, "I have a voice in the locker room. I'll say what needs to be said. What I want them guys to do, whenever I'm on some BS, I want them to tell me. I want you to say my name, man to man. That goes along with everybody. Say my name, and I'm going to do the same to you. Whenever you're BSing and doing whatever you're not supposed to be doing during games, in the games, not taking care of anybody, I'm going to say that to you." And he goes on and on. So I thought that was interesting because he hit both notes. Like the, yeah, I can learn from them, and we're in this together. We all want to win. I look up to these guys. Rondo and Wade each have titles. Jimmy Butler doesn't. But at the same time, he's kind of making it clear, too. So it was a little passive aggressiveness, a little bit of aggressiveness, and I mean, Jimmy's been known to make some weird comments sometimes, and I kind of got a weird vibe. I listened to all the audio of that, and it was kind of a little weird to me, but it just kind of reinforced how fascinating this is going to be and how different it could be from last year, because you got three guys not afraid to speak your minds, and in the past, Derrick Rose was more of a passive voice, for example. So these bowls, this is going to be a little different, John.
Yeah, it really is. And Jimmy, in terms of, like, the guys on the team, and I know Dwayne Wade has that, you know, championship pedigree, and he's, you know, a Hall of Famer and all that stuff, but, you know, for a lot of the guys on the team, about half the guys on the team were on the team last year or more, and, you know, for those guys, Jimmy Butler was their veteran voice in the locker room now, and so, you know, he's going to be a guy that they listen to. And, you know, even though Dwayne Wade is Dwayne Wade, and Rondo, you know, has won a title and has been an all-star a bunch of times and all that, you know, I still think Jimmy is going to have a powerful voice, and it seems like he's kind of interested in learning how to use that. Last year it was a little bit rough, obviously, with the stuff with, you know, him saying that Hoiberg needs to coach the team harder. That was taken a little bit weirdly, but that was, you know, and he talked about it the next day at shoot-around that they, you know, he was still kind of learning how to be a leader and how to really use his voice effectively, and I think that process is still ongoing, but it seems like his heart is in the right place.
Yeah. Have you got a sense of how he fits in on Team USA basketball-wise? And I guess if you want to stay on the leadership topic, like, is there any pointers that he can draw or any advice he can get from some of these guys? Like, Jimmy really hasn't been around great leaders, probably not in his basketball career. I mean, Joakim Noah has obviously been a very good leader for the Bulls, but, I mean, that's probably really the leader he's been around because Derrick Rose was hurt so often since Jimmy Butler was drafted, and Derek's not an outgoing personality. Like, it might be good for him to be exposed to some of these alpha dogs and championship pedigrees that he's alongside at USA Basketball. You think he can learn or pick anything up from those guys?
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the guys that he's on the team with, you know, Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony, Kyrie Irving, just all these guys who have, you know, been on these teams where they're, you know, the spotlight is a lot, you know, bigger on them than it has ever been on Jimmy. And, you know, they've been, you know, further in the playoffs, all this other kinds of stuff. And yeah, I think it is going to be good for him. And as far as how he actually fits on Team USA, I think a lot, you know, they only have two real point guards on the roster with Kyle Lowry and Kyrie Irving. But, you know, I feel like there's a good chance Jimmy is going to be handling the ball a lot. He's going to, you know, maybe with the second unit. I don't think he's going to start. One thing I will say, the impression that I got just based on, they let us watch some of the scrimmaging at the UNLV gym. And it seems like the starting lineup that they're going to use, just based on some of the units that we're scrimmaging, I think it's going to be Kyrie, Clay, Durant, Carmelo and DeMarcus Cousins. That's going to be the starter. So, so he's going to be on the second unit or the third.
Okay, so to me, it was Clay and Paul George was the toss up on the wing that was probably the hardest decision if you think about it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like Clay is going to be the guy just based on the units the different guys were scrimmaging with during practice.
Yeah, and you just had a point Jimmy alert on Team USA. Like, we could see a 1 or 2 minute stretch with Jimmy running Team USA. That would just be golden. That would be great.
I think it's within the realm of possibility.
That's going to embolden him to be point Jimmy on the Bulls, too, if that happens.
Yeah, and so then he can share ball handling responsibilities with Rondo if Rondo is willing to let him do that. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, I mean, he talked about wanting to play point guard last year. And then there was obviously the dynamic with him and Derrick Rose that never really made that super possible. But now Rondo is there, and that's going to make it difficult. But, you know, it seems like if he has this experience doing that, even in just in short stretches on Team USA, then, you know, I think he could come into training camp a lot more confident in his ability as a ball handler and as a passer.
Yeah. Another Bulls player in Las Vegas is third-year forward Doug McDermott, who's there with Team USA Select, which is basically a younger group that they kind of mold and bring up to possibly be in the future Team USA highest level of competition, and they scrimmage the national team that's going to Rio. And Doug's in Vegas, and on that note, we have a Twitter question from Clement via email. Excuse me, email, not Twitter. And you can email us at lockedongold@gmail.com. And he says, as Jimmy Butler's backup, what kind of minutes do you see Doug McDermott getting? Fred Hoiberg has entertained the idea of using him a little bit at power forward, but I don't think it's a good idea. What do you guys think? So, Sean, minutes for Doug McDermott, and all of them on the wing or small forward, or do you see some power forward minutes during Bulls season?
Well, he'll get plenty of minutes because he's one of, like, three guys on the entire team that can shoot. So I don't think there's really that to worry about. But, you know, the main guy that he's going to have competition with for minutes on the wing is Denzel Valentine. And Denzel is a guy, you know, he's a lot more of a ball handler, and he's a little bit more versatile. He can really play anywhere from 1 through 3, so he might play, you know, some point guard at times. He might not only just be backing up Jimmy. So I think Doug is going to get plenty of minutes there. He might get some minutes as a small ball four, just because if they want to do the lineup where, you know, they have most of the starters in, and then if they want to take Mirotić out or Mirotić isn't shooting well, then McDermott is kind of the only guy that they could put in there that would be able to kind of fill the same role. And I think Doug is going to get a lot more open looks now that, you know, they have those other guys on the team that are going to be commanding a double team a lot more frequently than anybody on the Bulls last year were.
Yeah, and he was 6th in the NBA in 3-point percentage last year. I think sometimes people forget about that. And as you said, the look should be a little cleaner, I think, with more playmakers and honestly just a better passing point guard in Rondo, who sees the floor like very few players do. So if Doug can convert those, certainly he averaged 23 minutes a game last year. I would expect that to be an uptick. Not a ton. I don't see him getting 32 minutes a game or anything like that. But, you know, mid to high 20s, I see Doug McDermott getting plenty of those minutes. The power forward part for Doug McDermott, that'd be a short stretch type of thing, matchup-based. And I don't have a problem with the idea. I think it's good if he can kind of acquit himself defensively and hang in there, go for it, so based on the matchups. But moving on, another Twitter question we have from VJ via Twitter.
Hold up.
For Chris? Oh, what'd you have to say?
Before we go off Doug, I have a scoop about his number. He hasn't decided yet, but he is deciding between four numbers.
Okay, let's hear it.
He's deciding between four jersey numbers. He's deciding between 11, 17, 24, and 34.
Oh, I don't know if he can go 24. That's like too close to MJ, and that's what Kobe wore for a while.
You know what 24 is though? 24 is his high school number backwards because he wore 42 in high school.
Now we're just getting really into it. If we're like switching numbers, like next thing you know, we're gonna be dividing by four and multiplying, and then take a square root of something. Like that's kind of intense. So when's he gonna decide?
I don't know, because, I mean, we're going to see in about a week, we're going to see Dwayne Wade introduced formally as a Bull, and he's going to have the number 3 jersey, and then it will no longer be Doug's. And so, I mean, maybe this will drag out until training camp, and that's when we'll find out.
I love that he's narrowed it down. I think he should, like, narrow it down by one in each of the next couple weeks, too, and just get it back down to two choices then.
Yeah, and then do a Twitter poll, just like our friend Big Cat was going to do, but Doug didn't listen to Big Cat's poll.
He did not, but we'll get to that question now. What's the ceiling for Chris Felicio in terms of potential next season and into the future? He has potential to be a quality defender for the Bulls and play solid backup center minutes. Like, the big man moves well. He had a couple blocks in Vegas Summer League where he recovered really well from the weak side, so he flashed some good basketball senses and instincts, which is saying a lot for a guy who didn't start playing basketball until he was, like, what, 12, 13, 14 soccer was his first sport in Brazil. But what do you see out of Chris Felicio next year?
Well, I know the coaching staff still really likes him. I think he's a rotation big man. I don't know if he's a starter necessarily. He'd have to get a lot better on the offensive end to be able to do that. But, you know, defensively, he's competent. He's versatile on that end. He can rebound. He can score around the basket. I think he needs to develop a little bit more of an offensive game if he wants to, you know, be considered as a starter. But I think he's definitely a rotation quality big man.
Yeah, he shot 75% in the 7 Vegas League summer games because he basically dunked and shot layups. And I think that's great for him. Like, just take the DeAndre Jordan approach.
Yeah.
All your shots are within 2 feet of the rim. Do that and just finish a lot of those when teammates set you up and play really good defense next year. Like, that's the ceiling for him. I'm not going to put numbers on rebounds and blocks, so that's dependent on his minutes and such. But just be a quality system defender and try to erase some mistakes from the rest of the defense in front of you that you know are going to come. If he can do that off the bench, that would certainly be helpful for the Bulls. And we'll wrap it up with this question, though, from Michael on Twitter. And, Sean, this is straight up your alley.
Okay.
Should there be a one-block city parade for the Bulls Summer League title, or should this team be honored before a preseason game? What's the proper celebration here?
I think you have to do the parade in Hoffman Estates, first of all. I think that's where you have the parade. They hang up the Summer League Championship banner at the... is it the Sears Center where they're going to be playing?
Yeah, so Hoffman Estates is where the Bulls' brand new D-League team will play, and the Summer League is basically a glimpse at some of the guys who could be on the D-League team, so that's a good idea. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I will say, I'm still trying to find out whether Doug McDermott gets a ring for the Summer League Championship, because he was only on the practice squad. He didn't actually play in the games, but Fred Hoiberg said afterwards, I asked him, and he said that Doug should get a ring for this performance. So, you know, we'll see. I'll have to ask him that at training camp if he actually got one and what it looked like. But, yeah, I think you do a parade in Hoffman Estates. You hang a banner at the Sears Center. And they're going to be stunting next year at Summer League. They're going to be the Bulls championship banner at Thomas and Mack Center at Summer League next year. I don't know whether they'll hang one at the Advocate Center or not, but, you know, it could become part of their free agency pitch. They could talk about how they're a winning organization and they won the Summer League championship.
The Bulls Summer League team has gone from being the hunters to being the hunted. I have no idea.
They have a target on their backs now.
In July 2017. But, I mean, we can't wait for that. And we can't wait for the rest of everything that plays out as well. Sean will keep us up to date on USA Basketball happenings and Jimmy Butler. As always, if you're interested in emailing us with advertising inquiries, with basketball questions, email lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Please do hit us up on Twitter @Hyken, @CodyWesterlin, @LockedOnBulls. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom. Leave us a 5-star review. Subscribe. That's what we need.
And you can, if you own an Amazon Alexa, we just found this out from the Locked On Podcast Network email thread. If you own an Amazon Alexa, which is like their Siri thing, I'm not sure exactly what it does, but if you own one of those, you can just say, Alexa, play Locked On Bulls, and it'll play the feed.
That's what we want. First listener to say, hey, Alexa, play Locked On Bulls.
Film yourself doing that with your Alexa. And send us the video at lockedonbulls@gmail.com or send it to us on Twitter. If the first person to actually do that, we will give you guys a prize of some kind to be determined.
Yeah, we have no idea what that prize is, but We'll think on that next time. Thanks for listening, as always, and catch you next time.